when you watch this in the scope of Toronto, I said earlier, and we had Darcy Tucker on yesterday, I think there's a lot of, and I don't know how influential they are, because I would put it to you, in Montreal, I think influential ex-Habs, if they speak out, would have some influence on public perception. But a lot of veteran players aren't liking the antics, if you will, or the tactics of Mitch Marner and his team right now. Do you think that that influences fan opinion when ex-players speak out, even though it might sound like a little bit of like, hey, when I played the game? And sometimes we roll our eyes at that stuff.
It definitely influences fan opinion. I mean, at this point, it'd be hard to recover until there's Mitch Marner on the ice, the opinion of what's going on right now. It's a little bit out of control. I think the only people who are really in the Marner camp's side at this point are like the diehard Mitch Marner is the next best player in the league after Connor McDavid crazy people. It's really out of control. I think when the contract leaked, or the contract offers leaked yesterday, that they turned down a 7 or 8 year contract for $11+ million, and a 3 year contract was offered for almost $9 million, and still the situation's not resolved. It's tough to walk that back, because it's one thing when contract offers at the beginning are, you know, outlandish, because everyone asks for more than they're going to get. The team always lowballs, but it seems like the Maple Leafs have continually offered better and better deals, and there's just an intractable side that won't move, and their demands have stayed completely unreasonable from the start. And it looks like it's more personal than a situation where Marner just wants to be paid what he's worth, because even at $11 million, not moving up at all, that makes him the second highest paid winger in the league after a player who was fully an unrestricted free agent this summer. So, like, I don't know, what do you want? Like, it's crazy how much they're demanding at this point. That's a boatload of money. He would be this like second or third highest paid Leaf of all time.
Do you think that this information is coming from the Leaf side then?
Well, I would assume so in some capacity. I mean, both sides are now leaking things, right? Or not necessarily leaking things, but
speaking on record. Side,
yeah, speaking on record, or, you know, letting little things slip through certain sources that have been advocating for them from the beginning. So it's interesting to see both sides now taking part in it, because that usually precipitates something bad happening in terms of that relationship not recovering.
Right.
So the only thing that, you know, confuses me at this point is, what can Kyle Dubas do?
Right.
Because all 31 GMs have not a responsibility, but a vested interest in not allowing this kind of contract to happen, because it sets a precedent that you can't really walk back. And so you can't really trade Mitch Marner right now, because what team can, number one, fit that under the cap, and number two, wants to give Mitch Marner that much money? You know, there was that proposed offer sheet from Columbus that Marner wasn't really interested in, but I don't think anybody in the league wants to pay him $12 million. So
by the way, what was the? I'm just sticking in here. What was the rumor? The term was for that, and the amount
for Columbus. I don't remember what the actual money was, but it was a long term deal, and Marner said that he only wanted the short term deal from anyone outside Toronto. So it seemed like really he does want to be in Toronto, so he wasn't really accepting anything that people were offering him. But I mean, if you want to be in Toronto, you got to figure out a way to stay in Toronto and repair that relationship and not, you know, completely destroy the team in the process.
So he wants everything Austin Matthews has, essentially, right? He wants Austin Matthews money. He wants Austin Matthews term, but he is not Austin Matthews. And we were having a bit of a debate earlier on the show of why he doesn't deserve it. And our co-host Hugh brought up the fact that Mitch Marner does a ton, and Hugh's a Habs fan. He's like, he's the person I'm worried about on the ice. He does the PK. He does the PP. He has a ton of assists. He elevates John Tavares. But then the counter is, well, John Tavares had 25 goals that were not assisted by Mitch Marner on the season. John Tavares has a track record of elevating his teammates as well. Austin Matthews is a top 5-on-5 goal scorer in the entire league. Forget the team. Is there any other reasons that you can outline that are statistically based why he should not be getting an AAV as high as 11 or 12 million?
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it is always you value your centers over your wingers. It's just the way that the NHL works. The centers carry more impact offensively and defensively. They transition the puck more through the middle of the ice. It's just the way that hockey works. They have more impact. So already you've got your upper limit of where a winger can go, and that's probably the Panarin contract. You remember he was an unrestricted free agent, not a restricted free agent, so Marner has less leverage to work with. And Auston Matthews, like you said, is the top 5-on-5 goal scorer in the NHL. He's starting to figure out how to score on the power play, and people forget how young he is. He's younger than Mitch Marner. He's going to score more goals in the power play than Mitch Marner will, that's for sure. However, Marner is, I think, the one thing that you can never take away from him is he's probably a top three power play driver in the entire NHL. He's that good on the power play. But at 5-on-5, he's not the guy carrying the play. If you separate him from John Tavares, which I know people think, well, Tavares is here for the next 6 years, but if Marner can't carry his own line, he doesn't deserve to be paid like he's carrying his own line. Power play work only goes so far. You're only doing a max of like 30% of your scoring there. So, yes, he should get paid like Auston Matthews for that 30%. But the 70%, the stuff that really wins games, especially in the playoffs, he's not the player that everyone thinks he is there. He's a good player. He's a top-line player. But he's not a superstar at 5-on-5. His production outside of with Tavares does not look amazing there. He's closer to William Nylander, even a little bit behind William Nylander at 5-on-5 so far in his career. So it just doesn't make sense to me where all the hype comes from with Marner. I think it's more about how he plays. He looks dynamic, but sometimes your eyes trick you. Looking dynamic doesn't necessarily mean the results are as great as the play looks. There's lots of players throughout history that look amazing and that are only giving okay results. And I'm not saying that Marner's only giving okay results. He's a top-line player. But there's a difference between a top-line player and an absolute superstar. And I think that's where the confusion comes with Marner, where it's, you know, local boy, plays a very flashy style, got put with John Tavares, who is historically one of the better 5-on-5 play drivers in the NHL right now. And all these things coalesced into one situation where he already felt slighted because of this rookie bonus thing, which, again, to me seems crazy considering how much money he's going to be making in endorsement deals in Toronto. It's a weird situation, and I just don't know how it gets solved at this point. I'm honestly wondering if the odds are favoring sitting out the whole year because Dubas can't afford to give in.
Well, what's the percentage chance that you place on that then? Because I know I hate predictions like that because it seems so finite and so many things can happen. But if it's a real possibility, what are you thinking? Like 30% chance he sits out the whole season or something higher, like 50-50 right now? Because the reports are that the sides are so far apart.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an insider enough to make a percentage. Sure. You know, it's just like gut feel. It seems like it's so intractable. And things, like you said, are so far apart that you can't see an end date. But things can sometimes change really quickly. I wonder if maybe when games start getting played and he sees what happened to William Nylander last year, if, you know, a word gets put into the agent, let's just get this done. You never know, but I cannot see it happening before training camp. I can't see it happening before the regular season starts, just because there's not enough pressure applied by those things. I don't think many players care about missing preseason games.
It's amazing. Andrew Berkshire, author at Sportsnet.ca. You can read, obviously, all his stuff there. I always think we sort of undersell how much fans in the other six Canadian markets kind of root for chaos in Toronto, in Montreal, in the big markets. Even, I mean, there's nothing but glee probably from Leafs and Canadians fans for what's happened to Ottawa, what, 2 years after going to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. How much do you think, and I would point out, every Canadian team, it feels like, every team, even Winnipeg 2 years ago, has had a moment and a spring and playoff round wins and often go into the conference finals, but Toronto hasn't. How much does this play in Montreal or even out west that there's a little bit of glee that this looks like a really important player isn't starting the season and it's chaotic? It looks that way.
It's very split from what I've seen. There's either people who are really enjoying the chaos, and there's people who are like, oh, could we stop talking about Mitch Marner? Why are we always talking about Toronto on all the networks? And it's like, because like half of Canada are Leafs fans, guys. It's what sells, so that's why. And it's hard to get people to understand that. But at the same time, I guess a lot of people see the Marner situation and how much coverage it's getting, and then nobody's really talking about Patrick Laine in Winnipeg, who came out and basically said he didn't know where he was going to play this year, and which was a little bit more provocative than anything Mitch Marner personally has said. And that was like in and out of the news cycle within 12 hours.
So tell us about Jake Gardner, because we were talking about that yesterday. Is there any perception that fans can get their backs up as well? The Leafs had a player, Josh Georges, who chose Buffalo over Toronto when it became public that he rejected an offer to be a Leaf. Is there any specific reason in your mind that Jake Gardner chose Carolina instead of being a Montreal Canadian? Is people have speculated the pressure of being in another Canadian market, and I'm not sure the fans were fair here, but he did have a share of large scale, you know, spotlight moments where he didn't play great, and I was a big Jake Gardner fan, but that's the truth.
Yeah, for sure. I think some of the backlash of specifically some Game 7 performances may have played into that. But it always seemed to me like Jake Gardner handled it pretty well. Like, I remember after that really bad Game 7, he met the media and he just took it on his shoulders and, you know, didn't really seem to carry it into the next year. So it seemed like he was a guy who was quiet but was able to take that pressure and let it roll off him a little bit. So I don't know if it's that or if it's just that he saw a better opportunity in Carolina. I think they're building something really interesting there. I think for analytics people, it's been a team that we've been watching for a very long time now, thinking, this is the year. Oh, no, okay. No, this is the year. And then last year, finally, things broke through, and you think maybe they'll put it together for a few years in a row, and they're adding interesting players that make sense. So I wonder if that was just it. The Canadians are still, you know, a bit of a weird team where I'm not sure what their competitive window is. They've got some players on the edge or end of their prime in Weber and Price and Jeff Petrie, and then a bunch of players starting their prime. So it's kind of they're holding on to two competitive windows and they're probably going to end up with none. So I can see why a lot of your unrestricted free agents wouldn't be interested in that. It seems like they're kind of in no man's land.